Welcome to the Grinders Table, the podcast where we sit with C-suite executives and founders who are taking their industry by storm to figure out how you can build an exceptional career and business. Together, we'll try to uncover how they have both defined the odds and what you can learn from their experience. Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Grinders Table podcast. Today, we have somebody that is amazing, but hold up, you would find out after she starts speaking. In my usual fashion, I don't like to introduce people, and I'm going to allow Caroline introduce herself.
Hello, Uwem. Thank you so much for having me. I'm Caroline van der Merwe. I'm the co-founder and chief product officer at Gem HR, and we're an HR tech startup based out of Cape Town in South Africa.
Ooh, that was so short, sweet, and simple. But I'd like to know more. Who is Caroline? Okay, let's do this. So one of the things that I noticed shows, you know, entrepreneurs and founders off is when we go for events or when we organize events and we say, you know what, nobody's going to talk about work today. We're going to talk about who we are, what we're interested in, I mean, what our hobbies are. So introduce yourself without your title. And then you find people just go blank. They don't know what to say. In this case, I'm going to try that with you, Caroline. Introduce yourself without talking about being the co-founder of Gem HR.
That is such a good question and a very cool question to start to ask a startup entrepreneur, because you know that all we do is work. But let me describe myself without my job title. I grew up in South Africa. I grew up kind of at the time that South Africa became a democracy. And actually, I am the daughter of two politicians, and it gave me kind of this lens about social justice in my younger years. But I had some character traits that were diametrically opposed to somebody who becomes a public servant. And those character traits are extreme impatience, and kind of the love of moving quickly and, doing things for myself. I don't like having a boss. And so, actually, when I came out of university, I wanted to be a civil servant. I wanted to work for the National Treasury or as a diplomat of some kind. And by a lucky mishap, I did not manage to succeed. And that was a really good turning point in my life, in the sense that I don't think I would have survived as a public servant because of those character traits that I mentioned. And so I had this kind of upbringing, but it seemed that I was more compatible with business. And so I went into a business and I kind of learned the ropes. And as I grew up, I started to get more and more interested in business. Then I did my MBA, and then I did in Cape Town, and then I did a post-MBA business master's degree over in the United States, and used that kind of break in my career as an opportunity to look into entrepreneurship. And that's where Gem was born. I kind of networked my way into finding a co-founder. And that's how I found this kind of ikigai, I guess, between making an impact on people, but also working in a fast-paced environment with no boss. And I think I found the right place for me. So maybe that's my story.
Ah, okay. That's actually quite an interesting story, because there are so many things that I'd like to pick out from that very interesting introduction. One of the traits of highly successful people is that some people say that they have a bit of delusion, right? It could be delusion that you're the best person in the field. It could be that delusion, like, everything is going to work out for you. There's always a healthy bit of delusion. Now, you talked about character traits, and although you might have, you know, sort of, I wouldn't say painted it as somewhat negative, you will find that those traits kind of led you to becoming who you are right now. Now, to be a successful founder, it's a different ball game. And I'd like you to talk on the traits you think that founders who intend to be successful should have.
Yeah, that's a good one. So I hear you about being a little delusional. I think that helps. I am unfortunately not delusional. I'm quite rational. But I think on the traits that you mentioned earlier and the very fact that you said that they were negative, I think is absolutely right. I think the trait that about me that sounds negative, but I don't construe as negative, is that I go against the grain quite a lot. I think being slightly odd or weird is a trait of a lot of founders. And it's, if you grow up with that sort of trait, then you kind of get used to not being kind of the normal one in social circumstances, et cetera. And so you get comfortable with being a little bit odd or going against the grain, and you get comfortable with saying things about yourself or about, you know, the matter at hand that are not necessarily the most comfortable things. And so when I describe myself in what you sort of interpret as a negative light, is I just kind of see that as the truth. It's a little bit kind of, you know, telling the truth at all costs. And so one of those things is I have no problem being seen as odd or a little bit different. And I think when you look at a problem, and startups are just a series of problems to be solved, and you don't mind being the person in the room that calls a spade, as the saying goes, then that helps you a lot. And so it's kind of being a little bit odd and being able to accept those situations helps you be resilient in solving a million problems and coming across a million challenges every day. And also it means that you're not afraid to call things out. And so we, you know, as a startup founder, one of the things you have to do is get people in your team, and you have to push those people quite hard. It's quite hard to push people hard, because you've always got to be the slightly unpopular one in the team. So I would say those couple of traits stand you in good stead. Delusion helps too, though.
Yeah. I know a lot of us struggle, and it looks like you've hacked it, but a lot of us, and even those people that say they don't struggle with it, honestly, they do, where you want to be liked, right? Or you want to be liked by certain people. Mm. And oftentimes that makes people make decisions that does not necessarily fit their values. For you, what exactly are your values, and how do you keep to those values to ensure that you're being intentional in how you're leading, you're being intentional in how you're living your life, and you're being intentional in how the impact of all your actions are affecting other people?
Yeah. It's such a good one, women. If anybody says it's not difficult to be unpopular, I think that they are lying. I agree with you. It's very hard. I just got off a call. I'm trying to hire someone at the moment, and there's people in the team that don't agree with me about this hire. And it's very difficult to hire someone because they're going to go into a team where people didn't necessarily support this decision. And yet we've made some hiring mistakes in the past, and I feel like I'm making the right decision. And so it's going to be an unpopular opinion, and that's not a great feeling. And so you have to go with what you've learned and what your values are. You also have to understand that every decision is very dynamic, and everybody brings different biases to the table. And everybody, like in kind of economics 101, there's imperfect information. Not everybody has access to all the relevant information, nor do I. And so you have to do the best you can with the information you have. But you brought up values, which is also a very important guiding light. And I think that that's something that guides me a lot in my day-to-day work. And I try to voice it a lot. And my values do come from my parents and my upbringing. And it's really just around fairness, fair and just societies, fairness to people, fairness in decisions-making, et cetera. And live in a very unequal society. And I think that my company, GEM, is an interesting kind of shared value proposition and aligns very much with my values. You can make a profit, but you can also have a positive impact on people at the same time. But in any organization, you come up against problems or decisions where those values are challenged and where you have to bring them to the fore again. And so it's very interesting as a founder that my values and the values of my co-founder get baked into the organization. And I'm in a position, that's one of the best things about not having a boss, I'm in the position to bake those values into our culture and to have a seat at the table when those values are maybe being challenged by certain business decisions that we make. So it is dynamic. It's not simple, but I think that's one of the best things about being a founder, is that you do have such a big say in that. And you can also say no to things that, that go against those values.
Absolutely. You touched on hiring just now, and I'd like to ask a question around that. We all know, especially for startups, your first set of hires are very, very important, because eventually it kind of compounds the culture that you're trying to build over time. Do you have any tip on hiring that is not conventional, right? And how do you let go of staff that aren't performing or fitting into the culture? I ask this because I get this a lot from founders where, oh, this person came in, he was great, worked very well the first few weeks, and my goodness, productivity has dropped over time. And I'm trying to figure out, do I reorganize the role? Do I fire this person? Well, what should I do? In your case, how do you manage that?
Yeah. So those are a very big question. So what is the secret sauce to hiring the right people? I don't have it. One thing I would say is, don't look for consensus. Go with your own preference. In other words, if this person is going to report to you, and my organization is still small enough that I have several direct reports, we're about 25, 27 people at the moment. I need to respect this person that's going to report to me. I need to be excited about working with them. I need to believe that I will be able to learn something from this person. And so people, when you look for someone to report to you, you usually look for a certain level of person. I.e. that person has a lot of to learn from you. What you should be doing is being excited about how much you can learn from that person. So entrepreneurs tend to be people that are very excited about learning new things. And so if you are not at the point where you think you can learn a lot from this person and you respect their opinion on things, then you're not hiring the right person. And to the extent that it's possible, you should punch above your weight, i.e. you should reach out to people that you think would not want to work for a small startup. And in some cases, that has worked for our organization. And it may take time. Sometimes it takes a couple of years. We've just had an example now where somebody is very fascinated by your organization, but not prepared to take the leap. And literally a couple of years later, their fascination has grown and they decide to join the team. So punch above your weight and be selfish. Look at how this could be a learning opportunity for you and how this person could accelerate your product. Don't sell your company too short. Easier said than done.
Of course it is easier said than done. Interesting. I liked your point where you talked about, you know, recruiting people you can learn from, because I do see a lot of founders sort of recruit people that look like them, sound like them, and know what they know. And in the end, you have square pegs, all square pegs, and nobody to fit into the round holes, right? So instead, you don't have people that are complementing their skills on the team, just, you know, replicas on themselves all around. And I think that eventually becomes a problem. You talked about, you sort of mentioned your co-founder, Simon. And I do like your interaction. I remember the last LinkedIn post I saw between you two. I was like, oh, this guy is really look cool. But I know that what looks shiny on the surface didn't just become shiny one day, right? I'm sure it took time to build that kind of relationship. In your case with Simon, what was that journey like, you know, agreeing to work on a project, building out trust over time, allowing each other person perform in their designated role, you know, and also helping plug the gaps that they may have had, or allowing them even plug your own gaps over time? What was that journey like?
Yeah, so you're quite right. I do think it's one of the toughest working relationships, in the sense that it's a very close working relationship, but that could be, you know, in any business that you run. But if you're founding a business, the pressure is just so great and the number of challenges are so great that having a certain amount of trust and a great working relationship are really important. I think the most important standpoint to start from is the positive one. And I think that ultimately what Simon and I share is a very similar set of values and work ethic. And so that's important, right? There's got to be some basic stuff there. I trust him and he trusts me. And that's very, very important. If there was a lack of trust, we would not be able to get through the challenges that we do together, because it is a very, very intense kind of working relationship. The second thing I would say is like, we've been through a lot of ups and downs, and the ups and downs continue, but our effectiveness as a founding team continues to grow, I think, on the base of those shared values, but also on the base of building up our knowledge of one another and our communication skills. And that has required external coaching, that has required quite a lot of fighting, lots of disagreements, etc. But I think that what I particularly respect about Simon is that he literally will never give up. He's one of the most persistent and optimistic people I've ever met. And so even if we are like disagreeing on stuff and we're frustrated, I know that he will never walk away from the table, so to speak. And that's an incredibly lucky position for me to be in. I think equally, I won't walk away from the table because I'm very stubborn. But there are many times where you kind of feel like walking away from the table and you're frustrated with one another. I think that's particularly pronounced because we are very different people. I think you mentioned earlier that people sometimes are drawn to those that are like them. I think a lot of founding teams are friends. They're very similar people, and perhaps those challenges are different, or perhaps they only emerge later. We started off as very different people. We did not know each other before we started this journey together. So it has been tough, but it's also incredibly rewarding because you build on your general skills of relating to people. And it is another element of the entrepreneurship journey that's yielded growth, a personal growth for both of us. So it's tough and it's never as shiny as it looks on the outside, but it is very rewarding. And I have learned a hell of a lot from him. And so my main reason, the top of my list of reasons for doing this, is learning. Making money, you know, there's easier ways to make money than doing a startup. So he came to the table for learning, and so did I.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned coaching. And yeah. On one end, people would say they don't have access to great coaches. On the other end, people are not vulnerable enough to admit that they need coaching. When did you realize that you and Simon needed coaching? And how did that conversation play out to say, man, we need external help, this is not working?
Actually, one of our advisors talked to us about it, and he asked us, he offered the opportunity for our whole leadership team to have this coaching session. And we did one of those assessments called Clifton Strengths, which ended up being very revealing. And there were five of us. There were three managers and then the two of us founders that came to that session. Immediately, the coach realized that the two of us were the problem in the group. I think because we were at a tough place in our relationship, and he was very frank. And I think we both respond quite well to people who are very straightforward and tell you the hard truth. And the hard truth that he said is that we need each other in order for this business to succeed. So I'm, for example, less of a risk taker. I make very good, rational, decisions, but I'm maybe not as quick to make decisions, and I can hesitate when I'm not sure about something. Simon is the opposite. He's very impulsive, but he's full of ideas and energy, and he kind of gets conviction about something way quicker than I do. And both of those things alone are not very effective, right? But together they can make a very powerful team. So that was essentially the message that was given to us then. And literally ever since that session, we felt like we were on a different level with one another. That doesn't mean that the disagreements, et cetera, went away. It just meant that we had a new respect for what we each bring to the table. And remember, when I've got somebody bringing more and more ideas to the table and impulsive things, that's frustrating to me. When he is finding somebody stopping their ideas in his tracks and saying, hold on a minute, let's think about this. Let's take some time to do the research and make the right decision. That's very frustrating for him. So it doesn't take away those things. But what it did do was help us understand the value of that, the value of coming together as a team. And sometimes I will win, for lack of a better word, sometimes he will win. But ultimately, on balance, if you look at the number of decisions we make together over time, that ends up being quite a powerful combination.
Wow. Thanks for sharing. that. Maybe this question is linked to the previous question, or even, I mean, linked to anything we've talked about previously. But what would you say is the most important lesson you've learned as a leader?
I mean, the one that springs to mind right now is have the hard conversation, confront something. I think it's something that we could all learn from in our personal lives, our professional lives, our personal relationships. And just, you know, there's a kind of a funny meme that goes around Instagram saying that thing that you've, that task that you've been anxious about for 3 months, you could have done it in 10 minutes. And it's just such a funny, very human statement to make that, you know, you worry so much about something that's intimidating, whether it's a task that you're doing or conversation you're avoiding. And it ends up causing you 10 times the pain than it needs to. And so that goes for, you know, employees at work. You know, most people actually want tough feedback. They want honest feedback. And the more you tiptoe around the issue, the more unclear that is, and the more that person doesn't know where they stand, and the more that erodes trust. And the same goes for, you know, discussions between myself and Simon as my co-founder. We'd rather just have the direct discussion, and both of us are quite direct people. And sometimes it's also admitting you made something like a product mistake, right? Having the hard conversation instead of trying to make it work is to say, maybe this project was a mistake and we need to scrap it and change direction. And oh my goodness, as a founder, if you can't admit you were wrong and change direction, I don't think your business will survive, because I've never met a successful founder whose business is what they envisioned it would be when they started their business. And so that requires coming to the table and letting go of this kind of idea you had about your business and having the very tough conversation about the prospect of starting from scratch or changing your thinking. So having the hard conversation ASAP is the biggest lesson. And I think everybody knows about that in their personal life and personal relationships as well.
Yeah, yeah, very true. And interestingly, I was writing an article recently, although it kind of proves, I mean, the point of the article was slightly different from this, but it sort of proves what you're saying. Most people do not like to have the hard conversations. And naturally, we like to go from easy to hard. Right. And the study kind of proved that if you structure out the exam questions and start with the easy questions and end with the hard questions, students tend to pass better. Right. But as we know, life is quite different, right? The variables in life are so much. You can't keep on pushing off the hard things just because you want to deal with the easy things and more palatable things now. So really learning to have the hard conversations tactically is really, really great. And I think that's very solid advice. If you could have any superpower, what would that be and why?
That's a tough one. Superpower. You have to give me a minute to think about this one. I don't know. It's a weird thing, Owen, but I don't tend to spend much time thinking about the supernatural. Maybe that's part of my weirdness. I never think about these things. I think that one of the most profound things that you can do with your life is realize the value of time. And so, you know, you can have a superpower of going back in time, but the fact is that we are sitting at this table and we're choosing to spend our time on this. And the biggest lesson you can learn, and you should learn it as young as you can in life, is that your life is happening now and you should make the best of that time. Not rewind time or look to rewind time or not spend your entire life looking forward to what's going to happen in a couple of years, but look at today and understand that tomorrow doesn't exist. Yesterday doesn't exist. Only today exists. And I made a kind of a profound comment out of a fun question there, but I really think that that's been my discovery over the last 10 years is that, for example, while we're working on the startup journey, it's so tough some days, and you can so fall into that thing where you are saying, I'm going to grind now so that later I'll be successful or wealthy or whatever it is that you're doing in your startup. But actually, the joy is in the everyday and the everyday grind and the morning coffee and the exciting people you get to talk to. Like I get to talk to you, Wim, and that's quite exciting for me. I don't think we need superpowers. Your superpower needs to be discovering that you've only got today, basically.
Yeah. You actually give us a profound answer out of actually a very simple question. Love it. Absolutely love it. We all know that entrepreneurship and being a founder, being a leader can be a very lonely journey, right? Most people understate how lonely it can be. Which means that we all need a strong support system. It could be an individual, it could be a community, it could be anything. For you, what is your support system, if you're open to sharing, and how's that helped you in the journey?
Yeah, I said it earlier, and I think this is one of the problems I think in entrepreneurship is that we are people who kind of glorify overwork and grinding. And so the people that you end up spending your life with are your colleagues. And so you better be spending that with people that you like and respect. And therein lies the difficulty of finding the right co-founder and the right teammates. But the other reality is around it is I think that in my life, I don't really have anybody around me that's in business in my family or friend group in sort of startup or entrepreneurship life. And that's such a weird thing sometimes because it means that the level of depth that I can go into about my work, which I'm so passionate about, is very limited. But it also means that my engagements with those people are not around my work. My identity to them is a Caroline that is separate from my work. And that's almost a really positive thing. Because every time I talk to somebody like you or any of my colleagues, I'm completely defined by what my job and my role is. So I think that's pretty important that you, when you step out of the work that you, the people around you see you as separate from that. I tend to confuse my identity with my work. And then I think a big thing is just finding what gets your head out of work mode. And for a lot of people, I think that's exercise. For me, it's really making sure I spend time outside. And so I prioritize that on the weekends. For example, I live in Cape Town, so I love swimming in the sea, and I try to do that year round on the weekends and, you know, get outside and do a little bit of a reality check. Cause we can, in the startup world, I'm sure you've experienced this, but we can sometimes feel like we're the center of the world and there's nothing outside the startup world. And it's good to have a reality check every now and again.
Yeah. So you feel like everything is going to come crashing down if you're not, you know, working or you're not focused on work. The other part to what you said is, something I've learned having to travel a lot, when you live in a place over time, you forget to actually pause and appreciate where you stay. I mean, the beaches, the sands, you know, walking down that road, going to watch a play. Oftentimes we just stop seeing those, the interesting things and just, I don't have an explanation. I'm sure there's a psychological explanation to that, but we'll just stop experiencing life and just live. And that's something I hope that people begin to unlearn. There's something interesting there's always something interesting wherever you live. There's something interesting happening in your own local vicinity, and you can always use that to decompress or relax rather than wait for your next vacation, which is probably in 3 months or 8 months. Finally, I ask all my guests this one question. And I'd like you to say this, it's a long-winded question and answer, so you're free to explain however you can. Power, fame, pleasure, and what's the last one again? Ooh, I've actually forgotten the question, but that's interesting. So anyways, I'd like you to rank which of them is most important to you and which is the least important to you? Power, money, fame, and pleasure.
Power, money, fame, and pleasure.
Yes.
And you've listed all these vices, hey? There's no meaning in there or anything like that.
Oh, no. The meaning, whatever it means to you, it's up to you, and you can explain your reasoning, right? There is no meaning.
Yeah.
Again, what I've noticed is everybody has different perspectives on this. Everyone.
Yeah. Okay, so we've got power, money, fame, and what's the fourth one?
Pleasure.
Pleasure. Okay. So number one, I would say power. I do think that that is something that, so I grew up as a privileged person in South Africa, and I see that as power. If you've got privilege, you have access to better education, but also sometimes you come across with higher, you kind of feel entitled to things more so than people without power. And that's a terrible thing, but I recognize what a role that plays in life. I also am a person that highly values autonomy and self-determination. And so that's how I see power. I don't really have a desire for political power or anything like that. I think the second one is probably pleasure. I think, again, in our world, sometimes we really focus far too much on what we are building for the future, and we are trying to build scalability, and we're trying to raise the next round, and you focus on the future, and that is not very pleasurable. What is pleasurable is being present. And it's very, very important part of the human experience, I think, to prioritize that and make sure that you're not delaying gratification or pleasure until 10, 20, 30 years from now when you think you'll achieve or arrive at some point. Then money. Money is very important. It is a means to many ends. And money is also freedom in many senses. So that's very important. The last would definitely be fame. I do not desire any kind of public profile, particularly. I don't like being the public eye. I don't like the idea of people who don't know me making judgments about me. I don't desire to be well known at all. I think it's sounds awful. I would hate to be famous.
Oh yeah, fame comes with its own problems. I know famous people that say they regret being famous. They wish they could turn back the hands of time. Thank you so much, Caroline, for spending the last 30 plus minutes with me. I'd like you to leave the listeners with one word. What is one word you'd like to leave the listeners with?
Present.
Be present. Awesome. Thank you and have a lovely day.
Thank you so much, Uwem. This is a lovely chat. Have an awesome day.
That's all on today's episode of The Grinders Table, and thank you for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to support the podcast, please share it with others, post about it on social media, or leave a rating and review. To catch all the latest from me, you can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at Monsieur Uwem. That's at Monsieur for Mr. in French, Uwem. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.